fascination or your amazement at some idea, something which, you know, if it's presented poorly or unexplained, you know, seems just bizarre or nonsensical. But if you can explain it to them the right way, they will be amazed in the same way that you are amazed.
I love that. Well, it was a pleasure having you on Between the Covers today, Ted.
Thank you very much for having me.
We're talking today to the writer Ted Chiang about his second collection of stories, Exhalation. You've been listening to Between the Covers. I'm David Naiman, your host.
And you're listening to KBOO, KBOO Portland. Up next, we have Black Book Talk, talks featuring Liwa Ubunifu, the author of Caged and Locked, My Personal Experience with Circumstantial Depression. Then from noon until 10 p.m., it's our live remote broadcast from the Waterfront Blues Festival. Don't forget that you can hear all these programs after they air on KBOO.fm or on iTunes and Google Play. All of these KBOO programs are made possible by member support. If you'd like to become a member, go to KBOO.fm or use our mobile app and click donate.
Tune in to KBOO on July 4th through the 7th for our live broadcast from the 32nd Annual Waterfront Blues Festival. We'll start the broadcast from the Waterfront Blues Festival on Thursday, July 4th at noon, and broadcast the fest every day from noon through 10 p.m. Again, that's the Waterfront Blues Festival, the largest celebration of blues, soul, funk, and rhythm and blues west of the Mississippi, July 4th through the 7th from noon to 10 p.m. here on your community radio station, KBOO Portland.
My life ain't mine. I don't wanna be alive. I don't wanna be alive. I just wanna die today. I just wanna die. I don't wanna be alive. I don't wanna be alive. I just wanna die.
Release these bonds that strangle me. For the past five generations, that's all I see. From parent to child, the slave behavior is an anomaly. No dads around, the woman an island, the children the minion, society the presser, blacks the cattle, social media the bit, self-confidence and self-esteem depreciating, failure always imminent. The fight to stop segregation and racism keeps deviating. They call this duck a cat, they call this cat a house. I ain't black, I'm American, but these caucasoid eyes still look at you like you a Negro in comparison. Repeating our ugly history again and again, they indoctrinate their ways like and culture like a louse, never allowing us to have or keep our own, making sure that we stay in their confined little monkey house. Cops keep shooting and we keep saying yes master to a country that will forever hate who we are. And generational curses forced upon us by our white slave lords, never to be forgotten in our subconscious little brains while they sit back and reap our hard earned rewards. The lingual we claim, the culture we claim, the hair we claim, the clothes we claim, the scraps we claim, the attitudes we claim. But if you really take a look in the mirror, you just as colored as the other blacks you fail to claim. And I guarantee you, if those cockies got their chance, they would shoot your ass too. That's the name of their game. Babies having babies put up for auction. Each one of those blacks with a price on their heads that will forever be a part of America's concoction. Generational curses and bondages or slave mentality. Actions speak louder than words, so let's see how yours compare to be. So release these bonds that diminish me. For the past seven decades, that's all I see. From parent to child, this slave behavior is still an anomaly.
That was Liwa Ubunifu reading from her book Caged and Locked, My Personal Experience with Circumstantial Depression. This is the July edition of Black Book Talk. I'm Patricia Welch. Welcome.
I'm Emma Jackson Ford. Good morning.
And I'm Obi Hill. Reflections, Mirror Image Books.
Liwa, welcome to Black Book Talk. We're happy to have you here today.
Thank you.
I think I want to start off with asking you, what is circumstantial depression? How does this differ from other forms of depression?
So the short answer to that is a depression that is stemmed from any kind of circumstances. For instance, A man who walks into a house and sees his father had just shot himself. That would be a reason to have circumstantial depression. Or kids who are being bullied in school and there's no solution to that. That would be a reason to have circumstantial depression. It's not just getting sad, it's getting depressed based on certain circumstances. And the reason why it's different from other depression is because, number one, it can't be healed by medication. And number two, in order to kind of cure circumstantial depression, you have to remove yourself from the circumstances. And that's a little difficult, especially in our society.
Well, circumstantial depression, would that also be like circumstantial poverty or generational poverty
You're talking about, so generational poverty, I'm kind of confused on that. I mean, I know you're being passed down poverty, but it's actually the feeling. So circumstantial depression deals more with how a person feels and how a person's going, what a person's going through. And then circumstantial poverty would be more like what a person's status is. So there can be generational depression, but that's a little bit differently than saying circumstantial depression. Circumstantial depression is based on circumstances alone. So generational depression, that's a little bit differently because you can actually inherit depression from your parents or whatever. That would be a chemical imbalance. And circumstantial depression has no chemical imbalance. Now, if you've had circumstantial depression for a long period of time, you can develop a chemical imbalance, which can be healed by medication. But again, the only thing that medication is healing is the chemical imbalance. It's not actually healing the depression from circumstances. So you would literally have to remove yourself from a circumstance in order to actually heal from whatever type of depression you're suffering from. People in domestic violence can develop circumstantial depression. Kids who are in poverty can have some type of circumstantial depression because of the situations that they go through. There's all different types of situations that you can actually have circumstantial depression from.
Okay, so it's not hereditary. So this is
no, good. It's not hereditary.
And it sounds like this is something that anyone could be vulnerable to.
Yes,
just depending on their life circumstances. Okay, we're gonna find another word, but right. Depending on.
Well, they also call it situational depression too.
Okay,
so
okay, I'm curious as to why you wrote this book, because this is a very candid book. And I think, you know, I can see that it could make you vulnerable. And as we progress, we'll talk a little bit more about some of the details of the book. But why did you feel it was important to write this book?
Well, I want to make certain that I state how the book derived from. The very first poem that I would say this book stems from is the poem where I wrote my very last thoughts before I committed suicide. That was the very first poem that I think this book has in it. And that derived from, I was suicidal and I was looking for resources at the library on people who were survivors of suicide. So I found this video and it said survivors of suicide. So I was really excited, you know. And what I was thinking it was people who try to commit suicide and they lived and they're telling their story on why they lived from it. And, you know, and how they're grateful and all that stuff. And that's not what it was. What it was family members and friends who were angry with the people who committed suicide. And they were discussing different views on that. And it made me really upset. So the first poem I wrote from that was My Very Last Thoughts Before I Committed Suicide. And I think realizing all of that, when I finally got into counseling where I'm at now, and I went to the library again to find resources on circumstantial depression, on people who've actually been through it, resources that would help or anything. And there was nothing. There's like no books worldwide on any kind of circumstantial depression. And so I decided that there needs to be a book about it, especially about the amount of suicides that are committed by just from people having circumstantial depression. So I decided that I'm not going to write it from a professional standpoint. I'm going to write it from my personal standpoint. And that's why on the front, it does say my personal experience. And I've dealt with it for so long that I figured that if anybody knows what somebody else is going through with this type of depression, then I could be the first person to write a book to help other people.
You mentioned in the book, which is well researched, I really congratulate you on that. It's you went in depth to talk about the public agencies that you interface with in order to try to combat this condition.
Mm-hmm.
Would you explain the process whereby you went and identified all of these different agencies and medical treatment formulas?
So I was put in social service custody the month before I turned 13. It was August 1995, I remember very clearly. And when I was put in social service custody, it was to protect my mother from the domestic violence and the abuse that I was suffering at home. With that, I think that's where I started trying to get help for my depression, because before then, I don't remember anyone ever trying to help me with my depression. Once I got into social services, my depression went from bad to worse. I was sexually abused in social service custody. I was physically abused. I was labeled jail bait. There was so much stuff that happened to me while in social service custody. And then after that, I was released on the streets at 18, homeless and pregnant by a convicted sexual offender. I've been in counseling for over 15 years at multiple different agencies. I've had white, black, I've had African, I've had, you know, LGBT. I've had so many different types of counselors. And the only person that has actually helped me is the one that I had here. And this is the third counselor that I've had here at Columbia River Mental Health. And I've had her for about 3 years. And she started helping me with my depression. And out of all this time that I've been in counseling, this is the only counselor who was actually able to actually shed some light on, you know, the type of depression I have, and like help me through it. I mean, I'm not totally through it, but help me, you know, at least come out of it a little bit. But I've dealt with social services. I've dealt with CPS.
For those who don't know what the acronym CPS stands for.
Child Protective Services. And I've been on both sides of Child Protective Services. I've had my oldest one taken from me and placed with her father, who is a convicted sexual offender, because he makes more money than I do. I've been in Child Protective Services. I've been in mental institutions. I've been in group homes. I've been in respite homes. I've been in a lot of different places. I've been homeless. I've been in shelters.
So you're an expert.
Right. And so through all of that, you know, I've been able to come up with this book and, you know, different experiences that I've had.
Other than the counselor and getting counseling, what other kinds of things have you done to combat the depression?
Prayer is a huge part for me. I always call him my daddy. God is my father. So anytime in the book, just FYI, that I relate to my daddy, that's who I'm talking about. That's a huge one. Music is another huge important aspect for me. Without music, I mean, there's be some times when there's a song in my head and I just have to play it. And I'll play a song for like 3 months in a row. But music is huge. Music is powerful. And with circumstantial depression, it's a game changer. On top of that, the last church that I've been to, which is the one I'm at now, has helped me out quite a lot, but I've been kicked out of a lot of churches, whole bunch of churches. And so that, you know, I've always sought God, but for me, church and God is totally separate. There are a lot of different coping skills that I put in the book, and that's my my chapter on dealing with roller coasters.
One of the most interesting things I found in the book was the part about church, about you and the church, and how it's a coping mechanism for you.
Yes. It's a coping mechanism. Now, I want to make sure I make this point, because it's a coping mechanism only if you find the right one. Because, like I said, I've had a lot of church hurt. The first lady that is actually at the church that I'm at now, it's so interesting, because one of the questions I asked her, I said, "Do you think I'm crazy?" And she told me her response was, "You never claim anything that's not in the Bible." And that was interesting because nobody's ever told me that before. You know, I've always heard that I'm crazy and stuff like that. You know, people always say that, you know, especially because I'm not as normal as other people would consider what normal is. And I like that church, and I like her and first her and Bishop because of some of the fact that they respond to me in a way that I understand. And they always tell me, they say that they are responsible for everything that they say to me. And they always have to ask God first before they respond to me because I belong to Him, not them. So they're responsible for what comes out of their mouth.
I want to go back to this. How do you get thrown out of a church? And that speaks perhaps to my limited contact, but it's like, how do you be thrown out of a church?
Yeah. There's different reasons. I mean, one of the churches told me that I was pregnant out of wedlock, so I wasn't welcome there. That was my oldest one. But they didn't explore the reason why I was pregnant out of wedlock, you know? They didn't care about the reason. But me being pregnant out of wedlock, it was not godly to be pregnant out of wedlock.
For so, those of you who are listening, there's a table full of people with incredulous looks on their face. It's not me. This is the year of our Lord, you know. This is the 21st century. Right. I didn't know people still held those views.
Yeah, okay. And then other churches. Now, the one that was most confusing to me when I got kicked out of a church was when the pastor told me, your issues are on the outside and other people's are on the inside. I didn't understand that. Until recently. I'm very open about my life, and I guess other people are not as open, and I guess I scare people with my life. I don't really care, but that's why I got kicked out of one of those churches. So, yeah. I've been kicked out of a lot for a lot of different reasons, but majority of them were for those particular things.
Okay. In the beginning of the book, it there was a hopelessness. At least this is what I was feeling. It's like, I have this malady and there's no cure for it and nobody can help me. I was so happy that, you know, by the end it was like, okay. Everything isn't coming up roses, but it's a whole lot better. Would you say, first of all, do you know anyone else who has this illness?
There's people I can look at their circumstances and say, okay, well, they might have it. Antoine Fisher was the first person who was similar to me, who was in social services custody, who had been physically and sexually abused. And I saw that he had come out of that and he was successful. Now, I don't know him personally, but I've seen the movie. Another one, A Child Called It, that boy, he was actually way more abused than I was, physically and sexually abused. And apparently he's successful. So there are people like that that I know of that have gone on to be, you know, made movies and stuff like that. I do know of a person who is in my life who does have circumstantial depression. And it was interesting because I wasn't able to help her. But that was before I published the book, and it's very difficult. I took her out of the environment that she was in. I try to help her as best as I could. But when you're in circumstantial depression, you go to what's familiar. That's the other thing too, especially when you're in domestic violence or if you're being abused by any kind of parental or anything like that. And that's what she went back to. She went back to her parent who was abusing her, and so it's with circumstantial depression, it's one of those things where you have to be able to see hope at the end of it, because sometimes you can't see hope. All you see is your circumstances.
It was hard to read at first. I was glad to get to the part where you talked about the social part of church and the coping skills that you gained through the church. I loved that you said that you were going to the bowl parties, the birthday parties, so you got more social, and I could see how that would uplift you.
Yes, it does. When I'm invited. Yeah. So, no, it does. You know, church is interesting, but it does help when I do go. I do have high anxiety on top of the circumstantial depression, though, and I do talk about codependency in the book as well. And anxiety is really interesting. It's like having a reverse schizophrenia, where you have all these people around you who are saying things, and they're people that you know, but they haven't actually, sometimes they haven't actually said them. You know, sometimes they do, but sometimes they actually haven't actually said them to you. And so it can prevent you from doing a lot of things, which can cause further circumstantial depression. So, yeah, church is interesting.
Even with this condition, you're able to get a college degree. Could you talk and speak a little bit about that experience or those experiences in order to accomplish those goals and objectives?
Wow, it took me 15 years, 5 community colleges, and 4 states to complete that degree. Over 250 credits, $75,000 in student loans, and even more in grants and scholarships. The college degree is one where I've achieved my associate's degree. I cannot go into a bachelor's because I've maxed out of financial aid. So unless I get some money, then I won't be able to get my bachelor's degree. But the college degree is, I don't know who, from the time I got out of social services, I don't remember anybody telling me about education, that it was so important or whatever, that I should go on to college or anything like that. I don't remember. I just know that that was the one thing I had focused. I needed to get my degree. And even now, I have 2 high school diplomas and a GED, and I've never been to high school, never been a public high school. And that's what my focus was. I just stayed focused on, didn't matter what the circumstances was, I needed to get a degree. So I finally got a degree because I wanted to get a good job. And yeah, I got it here in Portland Community College. And it was a lot of work, especially not being in, having gone to high school. I did get it. I've traveled for 10 years going through, I've been over to 19 states just trying to get this degree and trying to make my life better. And it was hard. It was really difficult. I sought out scholarships. I sought out resources. Yeah, I don't know what you want me to ask. I don't know what you want me to say about that, but it was difficult. It was very difficult.
I'm curious, you lived a lot of places. Why did you come back to this area?
So originally I had went to Tacoma, Washington. I didn't know about Vancouver. I didn't know about Portland, but originally I had went to Tacoma, Washington. That was one of the places I had been to. And every single time I moved, it was because of a different circumstance. So originally I was in Virginia and I was working 2 jobs, going to school part-time, and I was tired. There was one time I almost crashed with my daughter in the back seat into a semi-truck. All different kinds of things. But when I get sleepy, which is, you know, Harriet Tubman had a curse, you know, she got sleepy and, you know, that's what she did. And I have a curse. When I get sleepy, I literally cannot wake up when I'm that tired. And so my daughter, I used to put child locks on the door, everything. Like, and she, 18 months, 2 years old, would just break the child locks off and be walking outside at night. And I would not wake up. Nothing would wake me up. And one time I woke up and the cops were standing in the middle of my apartment. And I was looking around for my child. And then they had her downstairs and said she was just walking around at night just talking to people at like 2 years old, 2 and 3 years old.
Such a fool.
right. So after that, CPS started putting cards on my door. And I asked my sister, who was living in Virginia, I asked her if she would take my child for a while I could get my degree, and she said no. So I had an option. I could either stay there and deal with CPS, or I knew my rights. This is my second child, and I could either pick up my stuff and leave. So I took my 2004 Mitsubishi Endeavor, and I traveled across country over here to come over here. And the only reason why I came over here is because my biological mother was in Vancouver, Washington, and she told me to come over here so she could help me with my daughter, and I could get my degree. And so I traveled across country with her in the back seat, and we traveled from Virginia to here, and with $2,200, that was it. And We traveled all the way over here, and we came over here to Vancouver, Washington. And let me just say, it's been rough being here in the Pacific Northwest, because it's one of the worst areas I've ever been to. But part of me is glad I came over here.
Worse in what way?
So, worse than out of 19 states that I've been to, including Texas and Virginia and Florida and Maryland and Ohio and Utah and New Mexico and California and many other states that I've been to, this place would actually have to be the most racist, I would say. Even more racist than Texas. When I was in Texas, I can honestly say, I actually got myself off of welfare. I had medical, dental, pension, 401k, everything. Over here, I can honestly say, I can challenge people. In Vancouver, Washington, you cannot find at least 10 companies with a black person at the face of the company. That means the first person you walk in and you see, like the receptionist or the secretary, you cannot find 10 black people. I've done administration for over 10 to 15 years. I've done all kinds of stuff for at least 20 years. And I came over here and it was so difficult to get a job. They just do not hire black people over here in certain positions. I have never had problems getting a job until I came here. My daughter was in kindergarten and at Hazel Elementary. It's one of the racist schools in Vancouver, Washington. And they literally, I was sitting there, because they kept saying she kept getting in trouble. And I was sitting there watching, you know, because I wanted to observe. And this boy was hawking a loogie on the floor. And the teacher made her sit in it. And I told the teacher, I was like, she doesn't want to sit in it because he's hawking a loogie on the floor. The teacher looked at me, rolled her eyes, and made my daughter sit in it anyway. And I told the principal, my daughter was very smart. She was the only one on the ABCs and Hundreds Club at the start. And the principal said the other girls hate her. They wouldn't do nothing about it. They didn't care. So I ended up having to move her to a different school. Third grade, where she's at now, boy walked up to her and told all her friends that they shouldn't play with her because blacks and whites are not supposed to play together. She's had so many different situations where, you know, not only am I dealing with the racism, but now I'm having my child who is also having to deal with racism. When she was in second grade, she told me, she said, I hate white people. And she said, I hate white people because there were so many people who were being racist to her. Teachers, kids, the whole nine yards. And so, yeah.
So I want to go back to talking about your poetry, how you interspersed it throughout the book. How did that come about?
So the way I put the book together, I put it together in a certain way that you would go through circumstances with me. In the beginning, I did the very first chapter of Everybody Wants to Know the extreme definition of what circumstantial depression is. That's the first chapter of the book. What is circumstantial depression? And then the next one, I go into, you know, give you a little bit in depth how it's different than other types of depression, and I lift different types of depression. And then after that, I go into different circumstances that I've gone through. And the poetry, well, it depends on which poetry you're talking about, but each poem in the book is a different category. So the one I read today was about racism. And then My Very Last Thoughts Before I Committed Suicide is about suicide. And so they're strategically put in the book in a way that you can understand and go through my circumstances with me.
Lewa Abunafu, we thank you for joining us today. We encourage our listeners to read your book, Caged and Locked, My Personal Experience with Circumstantial Depression. It is clear that you are more than a survivor because you've been through a lot and you clearly have so much to offer. So we are looking forward to you coming back to us with your next book.
Right.
Call something like How I Got Over. I don't know if you're starting the next book. But thank you for being with us and sharing your story. And we hope that this is helpful to others. Again, we do encourage our listeners. There's a lot of information, people that you can contact, organizations that you can contact. So to all of our listeners, thank you for joining us for the July's episode of Black Book Talks, and we'll see you again in August. Good reading to you.
I don't want to cry anymore.
You're listening to KBOO, KBOO Portland, and Oregon Community Radio Stations. This is the Waterfront Blues Festival.
You're a hornbill with a gypsy soul. You're a killer, but you don't know. You stole the secret to my rock and roll. On that American railroad, on the American railroad, you don't need a ticket to ride. I wanna take you to the other side. You chase past in the night on that American railroad. Baby, I'll be your medicine, boy. You can meet me down by the river. There's a one silhouette under a harvest moon. I'm out here on the pavement, just trying to do my thing, singing this Delta song, burning gasoline. I get back to the end of the line on that hurricane railroad. Y'all feel all right?